Hello, everyone. Welcome today to the weekly influence, negotiation, persuasion, self-mastery call. Anything to do with influence or personal influence. Today is getting close to the end of May 30th, 2012. Summer is officially here. That's a good thing for a lot of people. We're getting close to the halfway mark of the year, so we make sure we need to stay focused on our goals. I'll be taking questions through whypersuasion.com there. Just hit on contact information. We can do that. I've got some questions already in place. You can ask questions right over the phone as we talk about different things. So the goal is just to spend a few minutes on a tool that you can apply, talk about some of the latest research, and then open it up for questions about what we talked about today and, of course, things that you're running into. Now, for a lot of those that are entrepreneurs, in sales, running a home-based business, one of the things that comes up time and time again is how are you doing, how much money are you making, or in other words, credibility. Credibility, if you look at the five C's of trust, if you've studied those, credibility will always be the first one top of the list. Because if you want to influence without rejection, without assistance, if you want to be in a resistant-free atmosphere, credibility is huge. Because think about it. When you have credibility with somebody, you are the expert, and there's no reason to resist you. Right? If they trust you and you're the expert, you have a solution to the problem, there's very little resistance. Now, if you're getting a lot of resistance, that means you don't have much credibility. Now, some of the things that really hurt your credibility is a couple items we'll be talking about. But first of all, just because you're a credible person, you think you're credible, doesn't mean other people think you're credible. Remember, a lot of persuasion involves subconscious triggers, mannerisms, word choice. Let me talk about some of these big obstacles that we see that really hurt credibility. Especially in the world of influence and persuasion, is one that really hurts your credibility is prejudging. You have to realize everybody you meet can do business with you, know somebody that can, but a lot of times to save time, we prejudge. They're not interested, they're not the type, why waste my time, they don't have the money. And when that happens, not only do you lose credibility, but it sucks the life out of your presentation and you're not going to persuade them anyway. Now you might be right half the time, but when you have that negative expectation, when you're prejudging other people, it does hurt your credibility. And you don't know if they have a good recommendation. You don't know if they're weeding you out for somebody else. You don't know if they could be interested. For example, this happened to my wife when she was working her way through college. This was in Seattle. She was working at a high-end furniture store. And this young, looked like a young kid walked in and wasn't dressed very well. Nobody wanted to help him. He's probably just looking. He's not going to be interested. He has no money. Finally, they send the rookie to help them out because no one else wanted to help them out. And later, they found out it was Bill Gates who said two of those, three of those, four of those. It was the biggest sale the store had ever had. And I know you have stories like that, too. So prejudging. Lack of sincerity when you're more concerned with their money or their wallet versus helping them out. Sometimes when you're in a different wavelength, like you're an analytical person, they're more of an emotional person, that would cause that disconnect to cause credibility issues. Knocking the competition. Anytime you demean the competition, demean a person, have something negative to say, for the most part, that can really hurt your credibility, especially if it's the competition. You don't want to demean or demoralize the competition because it does hurt you too as you go through this process. Because when you look at really great persuaders and you set up what I call your persuasion IQ, it's the psychological qualities that really makes a great persuader. It's realizing that rejection's not personal. Now, we know that, but the reason being a persuader or being on a commission or being entrepreneurs can be the highest paying or lowest paying job is how people deal with rejection. Because if you get rejected and hurt your feelings and you try to talk to somebody else, that will also trigger credibility issues. It will take your energy away. It'll hurt your self-image. You have to remember they're not rejecting you as a person. Maybe they're rejecting your product or service, but you have to have the ability to move on. Otherwise, it does hurt your energy, it hurts your enthusiasm, and it does hurt your credibility. Because when you're meeting with somebody the first time, you have to remember, they're looking for every reason not to do it. That's just how skeptical people are. And if they see one red flag, they're going to say, I'm going to think about it, come back later, more information, go to your website, talk to a partner, but you'll never see them again. Because they're judging you, and they're judging maybe the price of your product, your company, your product. Maybe they're trying to see if it's a solution to their challenge, but as they judge you, it comes back to that credibility. So the main thing to remember here is expertise. You are the expert. You need to act like the expert. Whether you accept it or not, you probably know more than 99% of the people in the country, in the world, about your product, your service, your idea. You might not feel that way because other people know more, but for the most part, you are the expert. And when they accept you as the expert, remember, there's very little persuasion resistance. And they are judging you. They want someone to persuade them. People are actually wearing an invisible badge that says, persuade me, help me out, help me solve this problem, help me make more money, help me lose weight, help me fill in the blank. And they want to be persuaded. They know they can't make all these decisions on themselves. And so when they find someone that has credibility, that's an expert, the doors of influence will swing wide open. Now, if you want to boost some of these things with credibility, your appearance, obviously people are judging on your appearance. Darker colors, blues, especially for men, will increase credibility. So appearance is going to be important. We like to think it's not important and people shouldn't judge. Well, they do. If you can let them know your qualifications. Now, that's a hard one. For example, if I'm speaking in a seminar, you know, I want credibility through research and published books and degrees and things that I've done. But if I'm making a laundry list, then it has the opposite of credibility, which tends to be arrogance sometimes. So have somebody else introduce you or slowly explain your qualifications through stories throughout your presentation. Do remember that you can always borrow credibility through testimonials, through referrals, as a way to borrow credibility. Have somebody can introduce you, maybe the leader in that industry saying something nice or recommending you and your product or service or idea. You at any time can borrow credibility. That's why when I was a first-time author, the first book, I had to make sure that the endorsements on the back, I mean, Stephen Covey and Brian Tracy, because that was borrowing credibility because I didn't have it. It was my first time as an author. And that's something that you can do. Testimonials, referrals, all those things can boost your credibility. Credibility is also enhanced by preparation. It's also enhanced by, like we talked about, appearance. All those things come into play. I was driving around the other day. I pulled into a bank, and there was this red minivan. It was a decent minivan. But on the back window of the minivan, and kind of a white ink or white paint, it said, Real Estate Investor Seeks Apprentice. And, I mean, you could barely read this. It's not very legible. Make $10,000 to $15,000 a month, and it had the phone number. Now, what are you thinking about? Here it is, a red minivan. Okay, are you making $10,000 to $15,000 a month? If that's true, would you be driving this? If that's true, would you be making this cheesy sign on the back of your car? You know, those are all credibility issues. Now, if it was somebody maybe in a nicer car, driving a very nice Mercedes, handing out a nice business card, or something that would have a different effect, I'm sure very, very few people called that number. So increase your credibility. It could be your letting people know about your background, your years of experience in what you do, the degrees, referrals, reputation. Another thing, too, is external surroundings. People do judge you by the car you drive. I'm not saying that it's fair, but it's how it is. They did a study in San Francisco where they put this big clunker car right in front of the intersection when the light turned red, and it would turn green. This clunker of a car wouldn't move. They wanted to see how fast the people behind them would honk at them, and they timed them. You know how they do it in milliseconds in San Francisco. And then the next time around, they took a very, very expensive car, like a Rolls Royce, and did it there and waited for people to honk, and there was a big difference between the two as far as the time. So what people see in your office, is your office messy? What kind of car are you driving? Anything external? Those things can help or hurt you. I was consulting with the chiropractors, doing some coaching back and forth, and she had some clientele, but they didn't tend to stick around. Well, so I said, well, send me a video of people walking into your office. She said, well, I do it out of my home. I said, well, send me a video. Well, they would walk in through her home, through the living room, down the hall, past the bedrooms, into her office. Not only had a credibility thing, that's kind of a creepy, subconscious, eerie, what's going on type thing that people judge. And she did have a credibility issue. She was great at what she did, and we turned it around, but that was one of the things that she had to deal with. Because people are looking back, you know, your track record. Have you been dependable? Are you punctual? Being late to appointment is going to hurt your credibility. Keeping commitments, being reliable. You know, I mentioned a clean office. They did a study with college professors. Half the students before the class started went to meet with the professor in a messy office, and the other half went to meet with them in a clean office. So all the students went through the same class, and the very end of the semester, judging the professor, the one with the clean office came across as more credible all throughout the whole professor. Remember, we tend to judge on those things. So being reliable, you know, if you're late every once in a while, okay, but if it's a kidney-sitting thing, it does hurt your credibility. Another thing that really hurts you, probably not even aware of, is arrogance. A lot of people think they're coming across as credible, but they might be coming across as arrogant. And I've asked people, well, what is the difference? Because I get to interview your prospects after they've lied to you. And here are the red flags that they brought up and did not listen, meaning you're cutting in and answering the question or assuming what they need. You're consultants here. You're asking three times more questions than the average person. Now, I know it's good time management to cut them off in the middle of a question or objection because you have an answer, but then you cross the line from confidence and credibility to arrogance. Let them finish. You're listening. You're asking questions because when you truly listen, they'll tell you everything you need to know to persuade them. Another complaint is they blamed others. It was somebody else's fault. They didn't take ownership. That's when people cross that line. They never really answered my question. Like that. Well, I know that's one of our challenges with politicians. When they get in debates, you ask them a question, and you get all dizzy because they're going around in circles and answering different things, but they never truly, you don't think, you're not sure what happened, but they never really answered the question. They answered what they want to answer. They said what they want to say. Always having to be right. Proving your worth. A lot of times you have to be right and proving them that they're wrong. Even if they are wrong, even if it's fun for you to do that, it does really shut the door to persuasion. You can own up to a few mistakes. It actually helps you with your credibility. And then coming across as condescending. And I know you don't mean to do that. No one really plans to do that, especially in a persuasion or influence setting. But you've come across that way, the way you answer questions. So if someone asks a question or objection, not only let them finish, like I mentioned, thank them for it. Thank you for your question. I really appreciate that. You don't have to be right. Say, my fault. I'm sorry. Apologies really cheap. I should have clarified that. Let me go on. You keep the door open for questions. Because if they feel stupid or that you're condescending answering a question or objection at any time, they're not going to ask another one. It goes back to our school scenario. I think we've all raised our hand, felt like the teacher attacked us or told us we had a dumb question or we felt like they felt it was a dumb question, whether it's true or not. That was part of that process. So be very careful there because that really, really hurts your credibility. And so how do you know if you have credibility or not? Well, if people are calling or emailing to complain, that means there's a lot of people out there that are upset. So that would be one. Not getting repeat business would be another red flag. When people need references every time. Now, some industries require this more than others, but for the most part, if you have a lot of credibility and trust, they're not going to ask for references. And if that's an incessant thing, they need references, that means there's some credibility issues there that they have with you. Not returning your phone calls, canceling appointments would all be very, very important. Because when you look at credibility, what that does is not only makes it easier for you to influence people, but it also helps you get more referrals and more business. I mean, most businesses should be using, getting 30 to 50% referrals. And that's a whole nother topic that we can talk about, that when you talk about referrals and people recommending you, because think about it. When your friend recommends a chiropractor or a doctor or a movie or a restaurant, it's done. It's done. That's all you need. You don't need anybody to give you the list of benefits. You don't need them to give you anything else. It's done. Because when you really look at word-of-mouth advertising and referral-based advertising, they did a lot of different studies of things, but restaurants, 87% of the decision of a restaurant for the first time we go is based on some what somebody said. That's true with places to visit, hotels, ways to improve health. Movies to see is 61%, which brands are best is 60%, cars is 58%. And there was a study done by the Roper Research Association that says Americans are far more likely to turn to family and friends and other personal experts than to use traditional media for ideas, information on a range of topics, especially now with the Internet. Because you can find out anything you want about a company or product. Sure, sometimes it's positive, sometimes it's negative. You see, in the past, the movie industry, when they knew they had a real big stinker, they knew they were going to not make very much money, what they would do is they'd have someone watch the movie and pull out the best 30 seconds. And so they put on this commercial of the best 30 seconds, and you see it, and it looks pretty good. You didn't know it was only 30 seconds of the whole movie. So you're watching it. Like, oh, I'll go see that. And they had 2 to 3 weeks before the word of mouth got out that it was a terrible movie. Now, with the Internet and places like Fandango, we know almost instantly if it's a good movie or not. The fans are going to know the night of and let people know right away whether it's a good movie or a good restaurant. And so, again, that can help you or that could hurt you, but word of mouth can be a very powerful thing. I always exceed expectations when you're working with people and talking to people. Credibility is a powerful thing. Let me repeat it again. When you have credibility and you're the expert, there's very, very little persuasion resistance. And if you're just getting started in your business, you can borrow credibility. You can get testimonials. People panic, well, I've only been here for a month. Well, you can get testimonials of other people you've worked with and done business with. It can be generic. It's still a testimonial. They know that you're a good person, that you follow through, that you exceed expectations. Those are things. You can have other people you know, if we've done work with, write testimonials for you. But it's power. If you want resistant-free persuasion, credibility is huge. So think about it. What is the one thing, this is the one thing I think about this week for your homework, and we'll open it up for questions, is what's hurting your credibility? Is it being punctual? Is it your office or your car? Is it your ability to keep commitments? Do you tend to blame other people? Do you need to borrow credibility? All those things come into play. So maybe you can't fix your car, but at least you can park it in a place to where, and I've done this before too, where I parked way in the back so somebody wouldn't see my car while I think getting things up and running. I've done that. So maybe you want to only meet in their office if you don't want them to see your office, or will you meet at a restaurant? There are ways to do that. If you aren't going to be punctual, a quick phone call, a quick text is appreciated. If you make a promise, and this is a big complaint with persuaders, yeah, I'll get that to you. I'll send that to you. Now, to an analytical person, send it to me. Send it to me right now. And you're like, oh, I'll get it to him. I'll do it sometime this week. And if you don't send it right away that day, you've lost credibility. So there's an expectation thing there. So if you say you're going to send it out, do it that day. If you say you're going to send them a file, drop something off, do something. Don't think it doesn't matter. Don't think they don't remember. Write it down. Get it done. And it will help your credibility. So kind of pick the one or ask those around you which it is to improve your credibility. Again, top of the list, when you're credible, when you're the expert, very little persuasion resistance. All right, so now you can open it up for questions. You can ask me over the phone or send me a question online. I'll take either one of those about what we talked about today and what's going on. I do have a question here about arrogance and objections. Kind of clarify what I was talking about is a lot of times we hear the same objections over and over again. It's good time management to cut them off because we have a great answer, but when we do that, that's when we cross the line to arrogance. And the question is, how long should you wait? So first of all, don't interrupt, even though you think it's bad time management. You need to listen to them through. It's the first time they've voiced that objection. 2 to 3 seconds. You know, you could be taking notes, you could be listening, you could be up in the air, you're thinking about it, you're pondering it. Even if you know the answer, that really instills confidence, trust that you're listening. Because think about it, if you went to a medical doctor and you're sitting there and you're not feeling very well and they open the door cracked, like, yeah, I'll get you some penicillin. You're sick, I'll get it for you. And they didn't ask you any questions, you'd feel a little violated. I think it's an extreme example. That's kind of what we do to our prospects. Another question here about prejudging. It's a tough one because we all do it, and it's worked in the past. But I hear horror stories all the time with prejudging. For example, I have some people just test you on it. I've trained at high-end Mercedes dealers, and they get people all the time coming in and not dressed very well. And they find out later that they're millionaires, or they're negotiating the price, and the salesperson only talks to the man and ignores the woman, and the woman's the one with the money. A brother-in-law in Hawaii owns a large construction company, and they come to the mainland to buy construction equipment. We're talking million-dollar purchases, and they'll be in flip-flops and aloha shirts and dirty shorts just to see how people will treat them. I mean, story after story. And you might be right 30, 40, 50, 60% of the time, but remember, everybody can do business with you or know somebody that can. They deserve your full effort. Even if you know there is no way they're going to purchase, you get to practice on them. Practice overcoming objections. Try something different. Fine-tune your presentation. Hey, if they're willing to listen, you can practice on them even if you know, but give them all your energy, otherwise you'll cross that line. Good question. Any questions over the phone? I'll take those. Or we have another one coming in here. We take a look at it. It says, Kurt, what did you mean about the psychological qualities make great persuaders? It's mindset. You know, we have mindset issues on how much money we make. We have mindset issues on how motivated we are. It's, for example, a computer. It doesn't matter how much RAM you have or how many gigs you have or how fast your computer is. If you don't have the right software or the right operating system, it doesn't matter. And so the way you handle objection, the way you feel about wealth, the way you feel about yourself, comes back to when we've talked about millionaire psychology, that mindset. It's different. You know, millionaires and successful people think differently. Top persuaders think differently than the average person. That kind of gives you the psychological edge to stay motivated, to attract the right people, to understand how it works. That's what I mean by that, because even a psychological quality as passion, for example. I've seen it time and time again where people have the same persuasion IQ scores, but one has more passion than the other. They will, even though the persuasion IQ scores are equal, that passion, that energy, that enthusiasm, that belief dramatically helps them persuade and influence other people. Good question. Any other questions? Got one here. Kurt, how do I explain my qualifications when I can't have somebody introduce me? Good question. Well, if you look at external surroundings, if you have the corner office with the large desk, if you're a doctor, you have a degree on the wall, there's little things, subtle things you can do throughout there. When I was working with the martial arts studio, and there was a waiting room, and it was just white. There wasn't nothing really, well, they waited for somebody. What we did is put videos of people doing martial arts, of testimonials. We put pictures and awards all over the wall. That was a subtle thing that increased that credibility. Now, if you're doing a presentation, you can say it in the story. You know, when I was at Harvard, or when I did this, when I did that, subtly weave it throughout the presentation. Is a way you can do that through a story or through something. When I was working on this, when I was doing this, when this was happening, that's a way to do it. So it can either be through things they think externally. You can, again, put it throughout your presentation, Or sometimes, if it's especially very analyticalized, you say, okay, here's why I'm qualified. This is why I'm passionate about what I'm doing. This is what I've been doing for the last 20 years. And let them know up front a little bit and then kind of pepper it throughout your presentation. Okay? That answers your question. One more here. Let's read it real fast. Could you mention about never blaming others or the competition? Basically, this is a tough one, because if you're talking to someone that's between you and another company, and you know this other company is not good, that they won't fulfill their obligations, that they take advantage of people, here's the kind of a catch-22. If you demean that other company, even though it's true, even though you're trying to help them, even though you're trying to stop them from making a mistake, remember, you have something to gain. Neither one of you will probably get the business. Now, if there's somebody they're looking at that you know they shouldn't be doing business with, don't demean them. Don't say something negative. Give them a way to find out for themselves. So maybe give them three referrals. So here's three people to talk to that I've done business with, so they get it from the other side too. Make sure you check the internet. Make sure you check like Angie's List or Better Business Bureau or some of these other ones, so they can find out exactly what they're dealing with and what they're doing. And that will help you there too. And I know it's not the easiest thing, but if you start demeaning and blaming and it's not your fault, pointing fingers, they don't have a good product, it will have the opposite results. Okay. Any other questions as we wrap up for today? Either online or over the phone. Of course, if you want to send me a comment or a question or something you want to hear during a class, question you want to have answered, I try to bring those up throughout the calls. Whypersuasion.com. Just click on the recording if you want to hear the recording. For those doing the replay, I guess you already figured that out. I know a lot of them are doing replay, especially those overseas, those in different time zones where it's probably the middle of the night where you are. And, of course, there's a place there on whypersuasion.com to ask questions. So, again, what I want you to do is kind of brainstorm the one thing that's really hurting your credibility. Is it being punctual? Is it your surroundings? Is it your commitment? Is it blaming others? Something that's easily fixed. And work on it this week. With that, everybody go out there and persuade with power. And we'll see you next week. Good night, everyone.
Welcome if you are new. We've got some people overseas listening via the internet. If you have any questions, you can always zap me or ask me over the phone. Call here, spend 20 minutes on some persuasion tools or something that you can work on, give you some homework, open it up for questions, feedback, comments, all of that fun stuff. Here's it. Get something you can think about this week to consciously apply so it becomes part of you, so you can have more tools. Key is always to have more persuasion tools. That's our goal for you. So, get a lot of feedback, a lot of emails, and a few things that I want to address. Remember, the recording is just posted on whypersuasion.com. It's there for a week. You are able to listen to that. Now, the major cause of business failure for entrepreneurs is lack of sales. Obviously, that's easy. Everybody tends to work on last, or they think they are okay. The skills we'll be talking about.